You're listening to The Profile.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. For the last 19 years, it's been my joy to investigate how Christians can lead better by talking to a variety of Christian leaders inside and outside the Christian world. So whether you are in a leadership role or simply looking to maximize your influence for God, I hope you find this next conversation helpful. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. If you have been a Christian for any length of time, you will know the phrase that Jesus didn't ask us to make converts, but to make disciples. And the saying reflects some people's perception that those who say they're Christians do not live in the ways that Jesus commanded his disciples. They say they have converted, but there is very little fruit. Well, in the last few decades, the discipleship theme has exercised many denominations and led to a number of books. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Dave Criddle. His book, The DNA of Healthy Discipleship, has just been published. And he believes that Jesus is looking to recode Christians so they become the kind of people who will naturally live out the Great Commission, which calls on disciples to make disciples. I look forward to hearing more about what is meant by that. So welcome, Dave, to the Leadership Show.
Andy, hi. Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure.
Your own journey to faith, Dave, first of all, and then how church leadership became part of your journey.
Yeah, well, thank you. I had the massive privilege of growing up in a Christian family with a mum and a dad who loved Jesus very much and super committed in local church. And so it was somewhere around the age of 11 that I gave my life to Jesus and said, yes, I want him to be my best friend. I want to follow him. I want to go where he leads. And for me, that wasn't a sort of difficult decision to make. I didn't have lots of, you know, deep dark night of the soul at that point in my life. I've been following Jesus ever since. And journey into leadership came a little bit after. So during my teenage years, there's always that question, you know, what are you going to do with your life? You know, at some point school will finish. There won't be any more exams to take. What are you going to do? I had a number of people during that period of my life sort of say, oh, I think maybe God's hand is on you for church leadership or for Christian ministry of some kind. And honestly hated the idea. I was very reluctant. But God really sort of massively transformed my heart when I was about 17 and gave me a heart for serving his people, for serving the church, for serving the world through Christian ministry. It was a bit of a... bit of a wake-up call at that point that this was what God wanted me to do. And so, yeah, been in that kind of area for the rest of my life since. Studied some theology and then been in various different roles in various different churches. And yeah, love the church, love God's people, love finding ways to serve and to nurture and to help people grow.
Sure. And you come from the south originally, do you? Or
certainly
served in the south, and you're now up north.
Yeah, so grew up in the wonderful city of Reading, then spent various chunks of time in Buckinghamshire. So up until recently, was on the team leading the teaching and discipleship life at Gold Hill Baptist Church, just outside London. And now up in Yorkshire, up in Sheffield. A year and a bit ago, my wife and our little boy Jed moved up here, and we're leading a little church up in the south of Sheffield and loving life.
And what led you to write the book, Dave?
Yeah, what led me to write the book? I can answer that in two ways, and I will. The first is this realization, you've sort of alluded to it in your introduction, that it's discipleship that the church is going to be built on. We are in a very much a post-Christian UK now. You know, we don't have to look hard to see that most people are not engaged actively in Christian faith. And all the research and all the stats out there say that the church doesn't always have the best reputation, but actually Christians are loved. Christians are liked by people. And so it's going to be far more effective if every disciple is engaged in discipleship, engaged in mission, engaged in those things, rather than expecting kind of the church with a capital C and the pastor with a capital P to be doing it all. And so really that raises the question of what kinds of disciples is it that Jesus wants us to be so that we can do the kinds of things that he wants us to do, which really is what my book is all about. But the other answer to that is that I was away on a leadership retreat a few years ago, and really, really clearly during a time of prayer, sensed God saying this little phrase, "I want to recode my church." And I prayed into that and sort of thought about that, and these themes emerged around that, which I'll talk about in a moment if you want. But that kind of was the beginning of the journey of this particular way of answering that question of what kinds of disciples does Jesus want us to be to do the things he wants us to do, including the Great Commission of going and making more disciples.
Thank you. Well, Dave, the book has a particular repeating structure around this idea of code, with each letter of code, C-O-D-E, representing an ingredient of healthy discipleship. Perhaps you could briefly outline the elements for us before we kind of dig into the kind of concepts you're conveying.
Yeah, so God knows that I like words and I like wordplay, so he speaks to me in that way sometimes. And so code, confidence, obedience, dependence, and experience, this idea that to be active and healthy disciples, we need to have our confidence placed in Jesus, not in all the rest of the stuff that the world throws at us, not in our money, not in our success, not in our fame, not in our whatever it is. Our relationship with Jesus and putting confidence in him needs to be at the very center. And so often we get distracted by other things. Obedience is all about not just knowing the things that Jesus says, because often I can love to know things, but actually doing what he says and doing things as a result of what he says is what he calls his disciples to do. Dependence, because I can't do a lot that's going to mean a lot by myself, and nor can you, and nor can anyone listening to this. You know, dependence on Jesus is how we're going to be fruitful and effective as we trust in his resources instead of our own. And this experience piece is really about growing instead of standing still. You know, if I call out a plumber and I find out that they've been a plumber for 3 weeks, I'm not necessarily expecting them to do as good a job as a plumber who's been in the industry for 30, 40 years, because we expect people who've been doing something for a while to have grown in it, to have got better in it. It's why most professions have that kind of apprenticeship stage where they're learning, or that training stage, and then they'll become a fully fledged something once they've gained that sort of experience. And there's no such thing as a Christian who's still a sort of trainee Christian. I'm not saying that we need to go through our probation period when we give our lives to Jesus, but I am saying that over the course of a life lived with Jesus, we should expect to be growing in certain things. I see that expectation in Scripture, that we don't stay spiritual babies, but that we grow up into maturity and into spiritual adulthood. Very often I can feel, and I know others feel, as though we can just end up getting stuck and standing still. So that experience piece is about becoming experienced with Jesus over time.
Yeah, and Dave, you say in the introduction or your early chapters that the book is partly focused on people who are passionate followers of Jesus, but also people who find themselves stuck. And I guess for leaders listening, they will have people within their congregations who would say they're stuck if they're really honest.
Absolutely. And it might be that there's the odd leader here who themselves feel
you never know.
A bit stuck. You never know. Because, we all have those seasons in life as leaders, as non-leaders. We all have those times when actually we just feel as though we're a little bit in a rut. And I hope, and I believe that there are things in this book that can sort of say, okay, well, what step could I take to maybe step out of that rut and into a newer and healthier discipleship?
You mentioned you served in Gold Hill. You obviously grew up in Reading as well. You were in a church there, and now in Sheffield. Are there any of the four C-O-D-E, any of those elements that you sense maybe churches struggle with most? Is it possible to evaluate that, or would it? Is that a bit of such a generalization question that it's not worth asking?
No, very, very happy to. And I think that all of them in one way or another are things that in the Western Christianity that we've kind of settled into are things that need to be addressed. So I'd start by saying all of them in different ways. It's probably different from church to church and from location to location. There are going to be parts of the country who actually their confidence is in the fact that, you know, they're in an affluent area, you know, sort of a middle class, upper middle class environment, and they've got wealth. And so they can trust in those things, and therefore they can appoint good staff teams to their churches, and they can put their confidence and trust in those. And so actually for some people in that environment, actually the thing that the leader needs to do is to help the church say, no, our confidence isn't in the fact that we have a fantastic staff team or that we have great production values or whatever. Our confidence is in Jesus and Jesus alone. I think though, if I were to highlight one in particular, it would probably be the obedience piece, because I think that very often when we talk the language of discipleship, and I know that I have been guilty of this massively over the years, and there's been some sort of wake up moments for me, which, you know, are represented in the book. When we think about discipleship, very often we think about learning. We think about a course. So we might think, you know, oh, if I want to grow as a disciple, I need to attend a course so that I can know the Bible better. Fantastic. That is brilliant. But Jesus doesn't just call us to know him or even know about him better. He calls us to be closer to him, to build relationship with him, and he calls us to go and do things with him. And the obedience part is the part that can sometimes be missing. It can be that kind of, oh, wasn't that a fantastic sermon on Sunday? But without necessarily processing and going, oh, but what should I do as a result? If it truly was fantastic, it should have moved me or transformed me in some way, which means that Monday now looks different. And very often I know that when I preach, I'm not actually thinking about what transformation I might want in someone else's life. And when I'm listening to other people who are teaching the Bible in a wonderful way, not always asking that so what question. And that so what is really what the obedience bit is. And so, yeah, I might highlight that one, but in different contexts, I'd probably say each of them is probably the most important, sure, which is why they're all in the book.
Well, indeed, yes. I mean, John 15, Jesus says, doesn't he, if you love me, you will do what I command. You know, those.
Exactly, yeah.
These are my friends. So,
yeah. Kind of... And the Great Commission, which is central to the whole of my book, it's kind of the core text. Not only is it itself a command, and if the first disciples had said, nah, we just want to know about Jesus, we don't want to do what he said, well, that's it. The church doesn't go anywhere from there.
Indeed,
obviously,
yes.
That was never going to happen, and the Holy Spirit comes at Pentecost, and it's brilliant. But also the Great Commission itself includes obedience. Jesus doesn't just say, go and make disciples, baptize them and teach them. He says, teach them to obey everything I've commanded. It's sort of baked into that what it means to be a disciple is to have that DNA of obedience.
Now, of course, Dave, many churches will have discipleship as part of their mission statement or part of their values. So I guess many listening are thinking, yeah, this is ticking our boxes. We realize this is true. But in practice, of course, it's much harder when you're a church leader to give priority to this, particularly as a lot of folk are very happy to kind of float through church and enjoy the benefits, as Dallas Willard put it, to become, you know, consumers of Christian goods rather than actually following Jesus himself. So what would you say to those people who think, yeah, you're ticking my boxes, but I've tried this before and it's really hard?
Yeah. Well, firstly, I would say I get you. I mean, you know, I've been there. Probably all leaders are in that kind of place for most of the time. I think what I would say is keep going, because the journey of discipleship, it's not an instant thing. You know, we often use that language of a journey of discipleship, and it's a process. It's a lengthy thing. It's a lifelong thing. So often we can sort of, as a leader, I want to jump to the quick fix, and I want to jump to, well, if I do this, or if I run this course, or if I implement this change, then suddenly I will see disciples springing up left, right, and center who are really active and committed and confident and obedient and dependent and growing in experience and all those wonderful things. But the truth is, no, it's a you know, long walk in the same direction, to quote another quote. And so to keep on going. Another thing I'd say is to focus on those who do seem to have that heart already, instead of, because it's very easy to get so focused on those who are stuck and saying, how can I help them to get unstuck? But actually, some of the energy and the vibrancy is going to be with those who are really wanting to grow as disciples. And it might be that you can affect far more discipleship growth, but with 1 hour with someone who really wants that hour than with 10 hours with someone who doesn't. Or with one sermon that is really geared towards those who are really wanting to go for it with Jesus, than for a whole sermon series for those who are stuck. So obviously, I'm not suggesting that church leaders just divide their church into two categories in their head and say these are the ones I'm going to invest in, these I'm not. But not to neglect those people who you think maybe they're fine by themselves, but to say actually no, that I need to give some time in my diary and some, you know, maybe some space in our budget for those people as well. The third thing I'd probably say is just to remind yourself that really this is the only way that you're going to see real growth. And so hard as it might be, it needs to remain a priority. I can't read the Gospels and the Book of Acts in any other way than to see that Jesus wants disciples to go and do his business, to go and do his work. He didn't found an institution. He invested in disciples. He didn't create a constitution and a set of services and all of those different things. He invested in people. And I'm pretty sure that most of the leaders who are listening to this now, in one way or another, the reason they got into this in the first place was because of people. They wanted to see people come alive for Jesus. They wanted to see people reached for Jesus. They wanted to see people filled with the love of Jesus and experience that. And over time, it might be that they, like I sometimes, have got sucked into the kind of the machine of things. But just to remind yourself, it was always about people. That's what Jesus was about. That's what church was always about. That's what your ministry was always about. So go for the people, because the people are going to be the disciples.
Thanks, Dave. You say in the book that the toolkit sections of the book are the most important. So each of the CODE has a little bit of a toolkit. And you say basically that for you is the real meat of the book. So tell us why that is.
Yeah, well, it kind of goes back to that obedience thing again, because I could, you know, for each of those four sort of qualities that I've talked about, there is a chapter that's a kind of biblical overview, kind of what is it, why is it important, how can it go right, how can it go wrong kind of thing, at a sort of theoretical level. And hopefully those are inspiring and encouraging and thought-provoking. But there is a danger that then you just go, oh, isn't that lovely? I now know what confidence in Jesus is all about and what can go wrong. Excellent. But so what? And so each of those is then followed up by a chapter that gives five tools that can be used. And I borrowed from Chris Rogers in breaking those up into head, heart, and hands. So what are some decisions that I need to make if I want to be a dependent disciple instead of just a independent disciple? Then actually, what decisions do I need to make in order for that to happen? And then that's the head piece. Then there's the heart piece, which is, what posture do I need to have towards Jesus? What does my will need to be towards Jesus in order to actually be dependent upon him? Then the hands bit is some things that we can do, some actions we can take, some things that we can practically, some steps that we can take. And the reason I say those are so important is because otherwise there's a danger that it's a book that people learn all about what a good disciple is, but doesn't actually give them any steps to become more like one. And I want to put my hands up right now and say, I am not the perfect disciple. You know, that doesn't exist. But if it does, it's certainly not me. And so each of those what ends up being over the course of the book, 20 tools that someone could take out and use, they're things that I've benefited from. They're things that have helped me, and they're things that I have helped others as I've shared with them. So my hope for the book is that it's not just another book that describes what discipleship is, but it is a book that helps people to really become more of one. And so that's why those books, I wouldn't have written the book without those. I think they're really important. And I hope, and from those who've had a chance to read it ahead of time, you know, I've passed it to various people, they found those really useful. And so I think they're kind of the lifeblood of the book.
You've been very candid, Dave, in the book about the struggles, ups and downs, things you've found difficult. And, you know, credit to you for persevering and then going on to write a book and then including all that in it. I just wondering, you know, was there ever a moment you thought, actually, you know, why me to write this?
There was definitely moments to think, why me to write this? I mean, I talked about that moment on a leadership retreat when I sensed God sort of giving that phrase, I want to recode my church. And I'll be honest, I didn't fully felt as though I even belonged on that leadership retreat in the first place. It was full of people who had these big ministries and these big churches that seemed to be growing and multiplying and planting. And it was all this exciting stuff. And I was there thinking, I feel a bit of a fraud even being here. And it was in that context, full of all that, you know, inferiority complex and imposter syndrome and all that kind of stuff, that God spoke this thing. And many times over the years since I've been sort of grappling with it, at first I thought it might be a discipleship course rather than a book. And then I tried and it didn't pan together. And I was praying about it, and I felt God say, "No, I want you to write this book." And many times I thought, "Why me? I'm not someone who has made tens of thousands of disciples. I'm not someone who has, you know, taught these principles to big stadiums or anything like that. I'm someone who's been seeking to live this out, and therefore to capture some of that, and who I believe God asked me to do it. So it's an act of obedience. But yeah." You mentioned that I've been honest in the book about some ups and downs in my life. You know, I'm sure pretty much every listener who's listening to this will be able to say, yeah, there are some times in my life that were really hard for me. I went through a really difficult divorce when I found out my first wife was having an affair. My wife and I, we've got our little boy and we absolutely love him. He was after quite a long period of struggles with fertility and with treatments and things like that. And all of that poses challenges to your faith and to your discipleship. And for those who are listening, but also for those that you're leading and those that you're serving, that's the reality of life, is that we're not just saying, how can we make disciples for the good days? We're saying, how can we make disciples who can weather the storms in the bad days and who can actually learn to lean into God during those times rather than away from God? I can honestly say that those times in my life which have been the hardest are the times when I've grown most as a disciple. And sometimes I can be tempted to say, that person, they're going through so much right now. It's a really hard time for them right now. So therefore, I just need to care for them. And then maybe when they've come through it, we can think about their discipleship and their growth. And actually, maybe we're doing a disservice to them when we're doing that. So it's not the major theme of the book, sort of suffering. But I know that from my own experience, and also from things that people have shared with me, that actually some of those principles and practice and tools in those toolkits are particularly helpful during those times where actually you're going, I just need to make sense of Jesus again, because it all feels like the bottom of my life's fallen out, and I need to know what's going on. So, yeah, in some ways, I feel as though that inferiority and that having learnt some of these, not through ministry success, but through life difficulty, actually is what qualifies me to write this book. Because I'm not writing it from a position of victory and acclaim and all of those sorts of things. I'm writing it from the point of view of a fellow disciple who feels as though he's learned some things and is trying to pass them on because Jesus asked him to. So that's why I've kept going with the book. And why I've got to this point where it is now finally released in the world. So, yeah, there's a little bit.
Well, congratulations. You've got a website, Dave, yeah. And there's other tools associated with the book. So as we close, maybe just mention those.
Yeah, sure. So if people want to find the book, you can go to Amazon and Google. No, not you can't Google on Amazon. You can go to Amazon and search for the DNA of Healthy Discipleship. Or you can go to my website, which is davecriddle.com. Criddle is C-R-I-D-D-L-E. Davecriddle.com. And there you can fill in a little thing, and it'll give you access to a little video series I've done, which isn't just a video series of the book. It sort of has some overlapping themes, but it's called the 1, 2, 3, 4 of Healthy Discipleship, and has some things around well, various different bits and pieces that will help you. And they could be used with small groups or various things like that if you wanted to. Or if you as a church leader ended up buying a copy and thought, actually, this could be really useful for small groups or for something like that. There's also somewhere on the website where you can find out about how you could get a few more copies, but not have to pay the full price. So, yeah, you can find out all of that at davecriddle.com.
Dave, thank you so much. And let's just pray that God will continue to use this ministry of yours, and you know, that the book will lead disciples to make disciples, as you undoubtedly pray.
Thanks, Andy.
That was my conversation with Dave Criddle, the pastor of Pathway Church in Sheffield and author of The DNA of Healthy Discipleship. You will find much to inspire and delight you within that book. So do go to Dave's website, www.davecriddle.com, and you can find out more. Or as Dave suggested, search on Amazon and you'll be able to find a copy. The book argues that we're all to be discipling others, ideally, whether as a church leader, a leader in another sphere, or maybe just someone who uses their influence in godly ways. There are many other things that we can be doing, of course, and indeed, even in churches. But it's a real marker of a biblical church, and I hope this conversation has been an encouragement to you. So this is Andy Peck thanking you for your company and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.